Welcome to Making It Happen, a career in the performing arts, where we discuss how to break into the performing arts industry for yourself or your child, teen, or young adult. Guests include professionals who are passionate and share my vision of helping talented individuals land professional representation and have successful careers in the arts. My name is Lisa Solek, and I am the CEO and founder of Making It Happen, a career in the performing arts, having helped hundreds of clients break into the performing arts business on stage, including Broadway, in films, television, commercial work, and more. This podcast is supplemental to my groundbreaking online courses. For more information, you can check out all the ways that you can benefit from my courses, my how-to videos, my live seminars, my free weekly newsletters, and free guides. Go to lbctalent.com. My guest today is Curtis Holland. Hi, Curtis. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm so good. And I'm so excited that you're here. I know we've been talking about this for like a year, and I'm glad that we were able to make it work. And I appreciate your time today because I know you're starting something really big tomorrow, but we'll talk about that later. So we're here to share with parents of talented kids and teens, and to share with young adults who are possibly in college, graduated, you know, in the performing arts. Maybe they aren't going through the collegiate program type thing, and they're just heading into this space of being a performer. And they might be people who are in various cities wishing to be working professionally and being able to make a living doing this. And they might be lost, or they're not sure what to do next, and they haven't been able to really land where they possibly needed to land at this point. So we want to share all of the inner secrets of the industry. But what we really want to know, you are definitely a highly acclaimed Broadway performer, and I think you have a lot to share about your journey. I'm not going to give too much away. I'm going to let you talk about that. So yeah, if you could kind of share when things started for you and where, you know, when was that time in your life when you knew performing was going to be a career path?
I am not sure that my answer to when I knew that being a performer was going to be my career path is a straight shot, because I went to a performing arts middle school. I went to a magnet middle school, a magnet high school. And while I was a child, my father also owned a dance studio where my mother and he taught me how to dance. They taught me ballet, tap, jazz, hip hop. So I was immersed in the arts from a very, very, very young age. And when you are immersed in the arts, it's kind of a given or expected that your trajectory is that you want to be on Broadway. Or if you are a boisterous kid, people say, oh my gosh, put him on Broadway, he needs something to do, like he has so much energy, he just seems so destined, when actually I was just bossy and full out, so you know. But
okay, but
I genuinely think that I went through seasons where I just started to believe that it was what I was supposed to do, because that was kind of the path. And So I was dancing and performing and doing all these things through elementary school, middle school, high school. I was dancing like 7-8 hours a week. And then I would go in middle school, I would go to school. We would have theater class. Then we would have after school theater practice. And then I would go back and I would dance for more hours. And same thing at high school. So I was just immersed in it. And then I also decided to go to college for something more practical, because that was my parents' desire for me at the time, was to get a practical degree, like something that did not have anything to do with the arts. If you want to do the arts after you finish your degree, that is fine. If you want to move to New York after, that is fine, but just get a degree first in something practical, which more on that later. Remind me about that.
I will.
So I went to school for sound design and audio engineering at Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. If you're in Nashville, don't quote me. If you're in Tennessee, you know of MTSU, don't quote me. But I feel like it's about 25, 30 minutes away from Nashville. Okay. And 40, four hours away from Memphis. So I went there for college, and I went there for sound design. Started my program the fall of 2012, and I did well, and I liked it. I was mostly doing my prereqs, but I still wanted to dance and do a hobby. And at this point, I'm still not like, oh my gosh, I want to be on Broadway. Obviously, I'm thinking of just getting a practical job and having a college experience too, because I'm away from home. I am experiencing kind of the world for the first time. Like, this is my first time being on my own. Mm-hmm. My first time having new friends for the first time in my life, probably since I was, you know, born, or at least from high school. Like, I've had the same group of people around me. So I'm on a people having a blast, doing all these things. And I find out about this dance troupe up there that they have called MPAC, M-P-A-C. Again, don't quote me, but it's either Murfreesboro's Performing Arts Company or Middle Tennessee Performing Arts Company. I can't remember, but I love y'all just the same if you're watching. And so I joined that group, and it satiated my desire to keep dancing, because performance had become such a part of my life. And I'm just thinking about this now, but it was such a routine part of my life and something that I bonded over with friends, that when I didn't have it, it felt like a different world. Mm-hmm. And it was nice to be able to include that normalcy back into my life again. During the second semester of school, I had already been a part of MPAC for one semester. And during the second semester, one of the girls comes up to me and says, during rehearsals or something, maybe a month, 2 months in, hey, Curtis, I am going to Memphis maybe 2 weeks. Like, I'm going to Memphis soon because So You Think You Can Dance is holding auditions, and I think you should come with me. And I said, okay, great. And for some reason, I didn't really even think too much of it. I wasn't in this is my big break moment. A lot of my career has not been this is my big break moment. It's kind of been stumbling into things. And again, we can talk more about that later. Mm-hmm. I feel like it'll probably wrap, what I'm trying to say will wrap up later. But mm-hmm. We decided to go. We practiced. She did hip hop and I did tap. And she mentioned to me that she had gone maybe times before. She gone maybe twice before mm-hmm. to the auditions, and just likes to go for the experience. So I said, yeah, sure, I'll come along and I'll come for the experience. I end up going to the audition. I get kept after she gets cut, and I keep getting kept. And I keep getting kept throughout the day. And then I get invited to go to Vegas Week. We go to Vegas Week. People are getting cut. I'm still there. People are getting cut. I'm still there. We're finally down to like the last number before the top 20. And I find out that I get accepted to be on the show. So I was on season 10 of So You Think You Can Dance. Again, more so by happenstance than anything. And not only by happenstance, because there's a lot of hard work that went into it. And that went into it. There are so many aspects of it. Everything was just kind of happening at the right time. I was in the right place.
Did you consciously choose to audition with tap?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Was that your main genre? Do you feel, because I know you as obviously an amazing tap dancer, but also a phenomenal contemporary dancer, a phenomenal ballet dancer. Like, I feel like you could have picked any genre.
I had the most success with tap, and I was the most competitive out of my skill set with tap. But I also don't think that was the most conscious decision. Tap is what I did anytime that we had a competition, because we didn't compete much. We competed for scholarships. We competed for talent shows. We basically competed for anywhere where dance could be used as a way to, you know, gain scholarships or gain resources mm-hmm. for the future. Mm-hmm. We competed for. We didn't compete.
Did you do conventions at the time?
No, not too many. We only did one every year, the Florida Dance Masters, mm-hmm. and did that for scholarship purposes and just because we were known in that community. But we didn't mm-hmm. even really compete much in that. Like, only individuals would compete for solo titles, and then we would go up and perform there often, but we never competed. So, like, there was a difference where a lot of our training was performance-based, not competition-based.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah, it was really helpful. And what I learned, though, for dancers watching this, every dance space has something to offer. So if you go to a competition studio, I am so enamored by my friends who have this insane amount of technique from going to a competition studio. Sometimes lots more than you get at a recreational studio that is only performance based, because stakes are just always higher. So you're forced to operate on a higher level and to see, the, for lack of a better term, the competition around you often. And so you see what the goalpost is, where, you know, without being disrespectful to anyone's upbringing, including my own, there is a little bit of big fish syndrome that can happen when you are in a space where you're not seeing other dancers often. And even seeing them on Instagram and social media, I think is different than having to have that energy in the same room with you and recognize what their work ethic is and compare like their fire versus yours. I just think is a different journey, but there is something that being in a recreational space and a performance-based space does to your spirit that cannot be taught. I am grateful to say that I got that. And I'm grateful to say that even my friends who grew up in the studio with me, who don't dance anymore, who don't dance professionally, let me say, still have this level of discipline, heart, fun, and camaraderie that I attribute to all dance spaces, but I know was very present in our recreational space. And the culture, the family, the way that my parents looked after every child like they were their own in a in a very specific way. And again, it is not exclusive to studios that do not compete, because I know people who compete who say, I have the same experience. I definitely felt just as loved, just as nurtured, just as cared about, just as looked after, and just as much that my teachers have my best interest at heart as any other studio. And I think, and after working in competitive spaces, we had more time to sit down with a piece of music and figure out what it means, understand it more, and like get underneath layers rather than just producing a dance. Yes. Both have space, both have a really great space. And I am so, again, in awe of people who can produce. And I've had to learn how to produce quickly in being in this space.
It's like the difference between concert dance versus other spaces that you would work professionally. With, I've interviewed a lot of concert dance choreographers, and many of them, when we talk about their process, the process is very different from someone who is hired to choreograph the Tonys.
Oh, yeah.
Choreograph, you know what I'm saying? Like, because there's there's the budget and the limitations and all of that. And it's a very different world. So what you're describing kind of feels to me a little bit like those differences when you get to a professional level, you know, and it more time in the creative space is always all the things you just mentioned. You know what I mean? Even as an adult artist, being in that creative space is everything. Like for me, I love the process so much, and the actual performance was just, I don't even know if I would call it icing on the cake. I mean, it was wonderful to perform, but the magic is happening in the room where the creation is going on and where the collaboration is going on. You know what I mean? And in your school, obviously your parents were very passionate about what they decided to do with their lives. And, you know, they were willing to give all of that time that was necessary to give you all of that. Yeah. And as you had said, to mimic what you said, many competition schools are the same. They do the same. They function in that way. Others, not so much. So, you know, you kind of have to find, if you're a parent out there and you're thinking about, okay, my child needs dance, where do we go? I mean, the basic is they've got to learn technique, you know? So I always tell people, find a school that's going to teach proper technique, that's going to be, you know, you're going to have teachers there that have either worked in the industry or are very passionate about what they're doing and have all of that background so that your child isn't learning improper technique. But beyond that, I would think it's just a personal choice as to whether or not you want to be involved in the competition. But I do agree with you completely about the stakes that are involved constantly and how competition dance and dance schools in general, when I think about when I first opened my performing arts schools back in, oh my gosh, 1970 something. No, 19.
Yeah,
do you
yeah.
know what I'm saying?
I do.
It was a different space. It was a different world. You know, now So You Think You Could Dance, I think, made a huge difference in the amount of children dancing, in the amount of male dancers dancing, and it gave support to the industry, very much so, you know. But so let's go back to when you were really young. Were you taking class just because that was your life? That was what you were surrounded by? And in that young age, and the reason I'm asking is a lot of parents ask about, how do I determine if my child is ready? Like, how do I determine if they're being successful in the space? Like, do you have any thoughts on how you felt when you were, how far back can you remember? Age 8, 9, 10? Like, how far back do you remember being in the room? Further? Three, four?
I was in the room at 2. But again, I am coming from a specific space where I had to be at the studio all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why you, and for everyone watching, Kevin Solak is my best friend. And but that's why Kevin and I get along so well, is because we have this very similar upbringing and this very similar way of looking at dance, because we've been in this space all our lives. And many studio babies who I know have this same type of vibe about them, where the creative space is just home, because we've been around it since we were actually born. So it's just our couch. It's just our sofa. I was assimilating things at such an early age just because, again, I'm around it. So by the time I was 3, 4, I was in the back of my parents' like classes twirling around. So, you know, the version of when you're ready, it's almost like a little sensei, Mr. Miyagi, if you will, of the child will tell you when they're ready. And there are also, something's inclining me to say this, there are so many different spaces of dance that your child or you, a child, can occupy. Like, you don't have to go to the ballet school and get this training. You don't have to, you can go to your musical theater camp and say that I dance for an hour a week and learn something from it, because my trajectory is my trajectory. And I'm in the spaces because of the bringing that I have, but you will end up in the spaces where you're supposed to because of whatever you're working on, and they're not meant to be the same. And everyone's kind of ratio of dance to theater to voice is simply different based on their environment, how they grow up, what they're inspired by. If you're not moved by dancing, like, and you know that you only need to do it for, you know, the purpose of getting ready for work, the way that you approach it and how much you approach it is simply going to be different. And like, there's only so much you can do to change that. And so I'm a big proponent of, number one, do what you love. Number two, train everything else in a very sensible way. And then after that, the chips are just going to fall where they must.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's a wonderful way of putting all of that, because it's so very true that people, especially I think high school students that are interested in doing this as a career, I think they get concerned about where their abilities lie regarding the three areas. And they shouldn't at that point, they should enjoy what they're doing. And certainly seek out training if that's something that works for your family dynamic, your financial constraints, if any, your time constraints, if any. Everybody's life is different. And certainly moving through the process and starting to get more serious about it, things change a little bit because your focus changes. But I agree totally with everything that you said, and you said it so simply, which is incredible. Thank you for that. Do you know what I mean? In a way that everyone can really understand, because you are going to land where you're supposed to land at the end of the game anyway.
Yeah. And so at this point is when I stop and I say two things. Number one, I'm obviously speaking from a space. I did not go to college for musical theater. And I have two thoughts on that. There are times when I wished that I went to school for musical theater. And that is because, and my friends who have gone to college state this much better than I'm about to, and I'm about to paraphrase a little bit from theirs, but mixed with what I know myself. But the way that they prepare you to audition and the way that they prepare you for what the world, quote unquote, is immeasurable. Like they get your book ready. They get you in classes, the amount of classes and the amount of training that you're doing, your chops are just thick. Like you're just ready to go at all times. You come out of there a machine. And it's really cool to watch some of my friends just come out and book and like just come out of the gate swinging. So they're coming out of the gate swinging from a very technical space. I came out of the gate swinging from a place of joy, hunger, and the willingness to learn that was not tarnished by professors telling me that I need to look a certain way or that I need to be a certain thing. College kids don't come for me, but there was this originality, and I've heard this from my friends as well, so that's why I'm saying it, y'all. But there's this originality that was not stripped away from me, and this uniqueness that when I walked into the room, I wasn't quite as polished by everybody else, but it made everybody lean in because it's not as often that they see this type of unpolished thing. Mm-hmm. And this fire that hasn't been as snuffed out yet, but you mainly find in people who are just getting to the city, regardless of their age, or 19 years old. I mm-hmm. see it in a 19-year-old that I know right now and love with all of my heart. And he has, when he's in the audition room, and he's in college, but even on top of that, there's just this fire. There's just this, like, throw anything at me energy that makes people lean in. And mm-hmm. at the end of the day, we forget that we are in the business of making people lean in. So if you make the fellow auditionees or the people who are auditioning you lean in, you're already doing what they want you to do. And that means that you can do it for a whole audience. There is a space for, if you go to school, if you don't go to school, there is way too many ways to get on Broadway or get to the top that, and we all know that those are in quotation marks because it's not the end of the world, right? Okay. But there's a way to get to these benchmarks that you want, and everyone's is different. Some people went to college for musical theater, graduated, got their master's in musical theater, ended up on Broadway. Some people went to school for sound design, went on a TV show, and then from that TV show came back to New York and started the whole grind, ended up on Broadway. Some people went to school for a little bit and for musical theater, in the middle of their training, got their first job, never went back. Some people are legends in our community now because they went to school, got their first job in like their first, second semester, always tried to go back to school and never could go back to school because they always kept booking. I know somebody who, and I'm not going to say his name because I would botch his credits and how long he's been out, but I think he did, I'm going to probably exaggerate and say he did maybe 6 Broadway shows before he came back and got and finished his undergrad degree. Went back and finished it. You know what I'm talking about?
I know who it is.
Yeah. But it's like, I think it's a number like that. But that is amazing and legendary. And it shows that there are so many ways. There are so many ways to do this. I've had people tell me every version of the story. Save your money. Don't go to college. Just invest in training. Go to college. Get this information. Just don't lose your heart in the middle of it. And don't let these people break you down. Know your worth.
Yes.
Those are kind of the first two houses that I would start from, and then recognize inside of that, there are going to be many iterations, and do not beat yourself up for whatever iteration yours turns out to be.
Yeah. That is so true in so many ways. I am so with you. You have no idea. We are on the same page, Curtis.
Yeah. I know we are. I do know we are. And so I went on the show, I went on So You Think. Then after we finished the show, I went on tour with the show. So we toured the United States and Canada. And then after that, you know, when you're on So You Think, you basically at this point, you're with a whole bunch of people your age. And we're like, okay, we're in the mix now. People know our names. What are we doing next? Are we going to LA or are we going to New York? And that's basically the big question. Are you going to LA or are you going to New York? A lot of them went to LA. It was closer. A lot of them are amazing like commercial dancers and wanted to explore that life. A few people and I went to New York, and that's kind of when I started the grind. I got here in January. I got here January 15th, 2014. So my 10-year anniversary of being in New York City just passed.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It was a big deal. My dad came up and celebrated with me, and it was really nice. We went to get some food where my first apartment was, mm-hmm. and one of the places where I used to eat all the time. It was just really sweet. I got here January 15th, 2014, and I told myself, I'm going to try this out for 6 months. If I don't get anything in 6 months, I'm going back home. And I will get back into school and I'll figure everything else out.
So you were only going to give yourself 6 months.
I was only going to give myself 6 months.
That's not a lot, Curtis.
Y'all, that's not a lot.
That's not a lot, but that's how old were you?
I was 19.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
I was 19. And so I said, 6 months, let's start. By first month, obviously, I had no bites because nobody knew who I was. And I got my agent through, basically, I had two different channels working for me. One of the dancers who used to dance with my father was represented by this agency and put my name into the hat at the same time that I just finished So You Think, and they were already looking at me. I think I was doing the reaching out and like to all the different agencies, and they were like, we actually just heard about you and we want to represent you as well. So come in and let's talk about it. And I am represented with Clear Talent Group, and I'm having a wonderful time with them. And what I'm about to say, I think applies to every agency. It just takes time. Relationship with your agent takes time. And I didn't know that at first. At first, as soon as I get an agent, I'm like, okay, so I'm supposed to have a job now. And it's just not how it works. No. I still had to go to a whole bunch of open calls. Mm-hmm. I still had to do the grind. And a lot of the things I was doing on my own at first. And I was like wondering why I wasn't getting jobs from my agents and why I wasn't getting auditions and things. And it wasn't until I began to find out that sometimes your agent only acts as a liaison between casting and you. So if casting doesn't know who you are, they can't talk to your agent to say, hey, get Curtis into the room. Right. So the more that you just go out into open calls first and you're just out there, like getting your name out there. And now being 10 years in the game notices when somebody new walks into the room.
Oh, yes.
Like, the game knows. The game sees the same people often. And so when somebody new comes in and somebody fierce new comes in, we're all like, who's that? It just happened to us recently. A new batch of performers are coming in and we're all like, who's that? And word is starting to get out around them, along my friend group, who is the next group of people to kind of be in charge in the next like 30 years, give us some time. But like, you know, we're talking about it, which means that every tier is talking about these young performers. And so getting in front of people is very important. And then from there, my agents started to send me out on more things. I started getting more callbacks, but I would still never get any bites because I had to update my resume. I had to get new headshots. Yes. And as soon as I sat down, maybe around 3 months of being into New York, I sat down with my agent, kind of like disheartened, like, what's happening? Like, why am I not booking? And they had a list. They were like, well, you know, look at this, look at that, look at this, look at that. Look at getting some new headshots. Look at some voice lessons. Look at all these things. Things that, again, if you go to school, a lot of this will be chopped out of the way for you. You'll have this handled. If you choose not to go to school, make sure those headshots are together. Make sure your resume, even it's just not going to be much at the time, but put something on there. Like, figure it out. Because we're also in a space where we get to back up ourselves in real time with our performance. So do not be too disheartened when you don't have anything on your resume. Go in there, crush the audition, and let your work speak for itself. And then your resume will just start to bulk up. This is coming from somebody who came into this with no resume and now has 5 Broadway shows on it. So like your resume builds, it just builds because your work when you're good and you do what you do speaks for itself.
Very true.
Love talking about this.
Very true.
So I was here for maybe 7 months before I basically got my first performance gig. And until then, my hustle job was working at dance competitions, rolling out Marley, putting it up, checking.
Really? You did? Oh, yeah. That's amazing. And that was on the weekends, right? So that makes, that's a perfect mix of what you can do to make some really great money. Long hours.
Like in different states, driving, like doing the whole thing. But you know, you're young, you have the energy, you'll be okay. Do it now. Before your back hurts.
Yeah.
And it just paid the bills. And again, there was something about all of this that was so just innate. It was like, this is what has to, I have to make money. And I'm not sure whether this fell into my lap or whether I was conscious at the time, oh, I need to make some money. How do I go about making some money? But things just happened in a way that I grabbed onto when the opportunity came. Mm-hmm. So take with that word what you will, y'all. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's almost like working out or like even dance training. At first, it's not about doing the best thing for your career. It's about doing something.
Join me on Sundays at 8 p.m. Eastern. Need more information? Visit lbctalent.com and follow me on socials at @LisaSelak_LBCTalent. By sharing our stories, we can help other talented individuals land the career of their dreams. If you're enjoying this podcast, please like and subscribe and hit the bell for notifications.